Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to part two of the Stompcast. Sophie and I are wandering through Victoria Park. It is raining a little bit, but we've got the umbrella. We've got our trusty, well, it's almost like a rainbow umbrella. We'll go with that.
That's very pretty.
Bringing some colour to things. Thank you for joining us in part two. So we're going to get straight back into the conversation. Right, in this part, we're going to talk a little bit about what does fertility actually mean? What's infertility? What is IVF? And some of the things that perhaps is confusing or useful to know. We're going to do a bit of myth-busting perhaps along the way. Let's just see where the conversation goes. And start off first of all to say congratulations, because you're an author. The Infertile Midwife is out now. We did check the link in the bio, not to just pre-order. It's been out for a little while, but it's right. You've been very, very busy indeed. I'm like that as well. I forget, and my bios aren't always perfect up to date. What was it like to write a book? I mean, what did you enjoy that process?
Yes, I did. It was because it's a memoir, so it's my experiences of going through IVF and then my son's dying and then going on to my third son. So it was, I don't want to say cathartic, because it actually wasn't. There were some bits which were so raw that I really didn't want to write. But I'm so proud of kind of the legacy that I've left for my two sons who died. I just feel really proud. When I was at uni, I was like one of those people that would drag myself to the word count. You know, when you're like, oh God, how, like checking the word count every 5 minutes. Like, have I got enough words? Have I got enough words? So I feel so proud that I actually managed to write a book.
Well, it's an incredible achievement, regardless writing a book in general. I mean, I know personally how hard it is to do it. But when you're writing about something that is so deeply personal, things that you've gone through that's so hard, like, you know, it's just incredible. So huge congratulations. And you should be, you know, really proud of yourself, really. So, you know, the book is obviously sharing your experiences, and, you know, I'm certain people, you know, as they read that, they'll learn so much about this as a topic, as an area, to gain more understanding of what infertility is, what does baby loss really mean. So I thought perhaps in this segment we could talk a little bit about, like, what is infertility? What does that really mean, and what are your options? So yeah, we've got the midwife hat on now.
Well, weirdly enough, midwives don't really know that much about infertility. It's not part of our training, so we don't know a huge amount at all. Although I feel like I could write a PhD on it now. But infertility is defined by the World Health Organization as disease of the reproductive organs. So that could be male or female infertility. So it's as simple as that. Your reproductive organs aren't working.
So disease means we're basically talking about something isn't working, isn't quite doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So in terms of female infertility then, how long do you need to try before you know, oh, actually, I need to get help here or whatever? Because, you know, of course, you know, sometimes you can get pregnant the first month or first time, but for a lot of people, that isn't their experience.
Yeah.
It does take time. So how do you know when you need to kind of get help and when has it become a problem, I guess?
So most couples will conceive within a year of trying. Mm-hmm. And by trying, that means having regular intercourse without protection.
Yeah.
So for most couples, up to a year is very, very normal. So if you're less than 35 and you've been trying for more than a year, then I would go and see your GP. If you're over 35, and definitely if you're over 40, I would not wait a year. 6 months would be perfectly adequate. If you've been trying for 6 months and you've not conceived, then get yourself down to your GP to start with, so that they can kind of get the ball rolling and run some basic tests first of all.
And what does, when you say get the ball rolling, what are those kind of tests? So you've seen your GP, you've tried me for a year, so up to over a year, if you're under 35, 6 months-ish, if you're over 35. So you've gone down to the GP and said, we've been trying, we've been having regular sex, we've got, you know, no contraception, you know, we're doing all those things. What happens next usually?
So usually you would get referred for some blood tests, and they would be things like your follicle stimulating hormone, potentially progesterone. They'd have to be done on different days of your cycle, so it can be tricky kind of trying to time it all, because booking a blood test, making sure on the right day of your cycle can be tricky, but that would be kind of a starting point, would be to look at your bloods.
So the kind of the bloods that relate to your reproductive system, looking at whether you're stimulating the egg release and so on, that, so looking at those kind of reproductive type hormones in the first place.
Yes, exactly. And then depending on what they showed, you might be referred to your local gynaecology department, might be referred for like a vaginal ultrasound to have a look at what's going on inside with your ovaries and things like that. Potentially as well, your partner might also be sent for some investigation, so a very basic kind of semen analysis.
So looking at like sperm count and all this kind of the quality of sperm and so on to see, so you're kind of working out like, is there, you know, is there any issue on either side, like what's going on kind of thing. So if those come back and there's no obvious abnormality in that sense, what happens then? Are you immediately then looking at IVF, or like what is the next step after that?
I mean, it really would depend on what came back, but you would essentially, even though, as we discussed earlier, it could be male or female, you would go via gynaecology. So that's how you get into your IVF clinics, via gynaecology usually. Once you've been seen by the gynaecologist and they've ruled out everything that they think that they can rule out or done their investigations, then they would refer you onto a fertility clinic.
So there are some things that, like, there are some kind of physical causes or processes that can affect fertility, right? And there's different things that you can potentially even treat that can then make fertility more likely, I guess, like polycystic ovary syndrome, yeah, and things like that. Yeah. So there's lots of different things that... So the idea, I guess, is that pathways then... The gynecologist is trying to work out, are there reversible causes, are there things we can treat, are there things that are going on here that perhaps we can look at that then will allow, you know, the fertility process.
Yeah, and even lifestyle changes. So especially with male factor infertility, like, you can make some really positive lifestyle changes. So stopping smoking, having a good diet, cutting down your drinking, things like wearing two tight boxers, if you're doing a lot of cycling. Basically, you want your testicles to be cooler, that's why they're on the outside of your body.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Anything that's heating up your testicles can have a detrimental effect on your male fertility. So there are quite a lot of simple lifestyle
people
changes.
People often don't realise how much smoking and alcohol can affect.
Yes.
You know, that's quite a common thing that people don't realise that actually can affect it. So being in, like, I guess, more optimum state of health can help from a male perspective. And so, you know, right, you kind of looked at those things, everything's been adjusted lifestyle wise still not able, then you're referred from the gynecologist to the IVF clinic, you know, because you said you've had to pay a lot of money. How does it work with, right, are you gonna have the NHS or not? What are the rules?
So each CCG, which has been rebranded, haven't they, to ICBs now,
so each kind of trust or area,
each local area will have criteria of who they fund and who they don't fund based on whoever bigwigs decide what that is.
So you're talking about a postcode lottery here a little bit, right?
Yeah. So depending on where you live, your local area will decide what they fund in terms of fertility treatment. So NICE guidance recommends that you should have 3 fully funded rounds of IVF. I have had 0 funded rounds of IVF from the NHS.
Why?
So when we were living in London, which was when we first were going through infertility, I had a blood test called AMH, which is anti-Müllerian hormone, which is an indicator of your egg reserve. And mine was very low, which is why we couldn't conceive. And at the time when we were living in London, they had a cutoff of, if your AMH was below a certain level, they didn't think that you were worth doing IVF for, because statistically it was less likely to work. Although I did fall pregnant the first go, so figure. But I didn't meet the criteria for funded IVF there. And then since then we've moved to Essex, and we were one of the only CCGs at the time that didn't fund IVF on the NHS at all, although that has since changed. But if you've...
But how can that be fair? I mean, if you're looking at provision, like, how is that fair?
It's absolutely not fair, is it? But there's also loads of criteria. So if one of the partners has had a baby from a previous relationship, you're not eligible for NHS funding. You know, there's loads of criteria. So when we then had moved house, I think at the time it wasn't funded, but in some areas, if you've paid for private funding, you can't get NHS. It's just a minefield, basically.
Just feels a little bit like everything's stacked against you. That's what it sounds like to me.
I mean, it felt that way. It definitely felt that way.
Doesn't
when I
feel
was...
like the way that we should be, like, when you've got a family, and I don't care what to say this, you know, you've got 2 people here looking to have children, we should surely be trying to help that happen, not look for reasons for it not to happen. Does that make sense?
Well,
sound,
I mean,
doesn't sound like the right
you
direction.
And I agree on that point, but there's loads of people that would argue the point that we shouldn't be funding any IVF NHS, that having a baby is a lifestyle choice, not a disease, that we're selfish, that we should adopt, that we're populating an overpopulated world. So there's definitely a lot of like trolling of people that do IVF.
Well, I mean, you know, we fundamentally, human beings are here to continue the existence of the human race and have children. We are actually here to have children. And there's a perfect, and it is a perfectly legitimate choice to choose to not have children if you chose to. I mean, I don't have children. I don't know. It may be something that happens in my life. It might not. But, and that's fine. You might choose, I don't want to. That's actually fine. That doesn't change your value or whatever as a man or a woman. But if you want to have children, I think we should be going as far as we can to support this because, you know, it's the, it's the beauty of being human, like you're seeing, you know, having new generations, and like, I don't know, it just feels like something we should be like positively supporting.
I mean, I'm 100% all thing, for
IVF. But I don't get why people would be against that.
I mean, I don't understand it either. But there is definitely a lot of pushback. A certain newspaper online that has a sidebar will often, you know, there'll be a lot of trolling and those sorts of things in the comment section of people who are very open about having IVF and things like that. And those people are entitled to their opinion and that's their opinion. But, you know, my little two-year-old is honestly the most gorgeous little curly-haired cherub ever. And I'm like, well, without IVF, he would never be here.
I don't understand that. So what we're saying then is there is a lot of variability depending on what you're talking like quite close, London to Essex and very far.
No, it's not very far.
So you're talking about very like close regional variability. I mean, yeah, so you then had to, you, so just to say that again, so you haven't received any funded IVF, you had to pay for yourself.
So I've done 11 rounds of IVF and I footed the bill for every single one.
That's a lot of money. I don't ask the parents this, but it's a lot of money, right?
It's a lot of money and I'm an NHS midwife, right? So just to put that in perspective, I do not have a lot of money, but I have spent every penny that I have on trying to have a family.
It just doesn't sound right. It doesn't feel fair. I mean, and also, I mean, for you, you're working in this system, you're looking, you're caring for people who are having children. It just, that must have been just so, that must be such a difficult oxymoron to deal with. That, you know, that situation must be so strange for you to be like, I'm trying to help here, but also I don't feel like I'm, perhaps I'm not getting the help. I'm having to go out there and pay for it myself, you know?
Yes, but also I think, you know, you can vouch, there are not that many perks for working in the NHS, and I don't think anyone joins the NHS because they're expecting loads of perks. I had to make my peace with it because what else was I going to do? It's actually really tough because even when I would speak to other people that were going through infertility, if they had NHS funding, sometimes I felt a bit resentful to that, which is obviously awful because I wouldn't wish it on anyone. But at the same time, you're thinking, oh gosh, I wish I hadn't had to. I wish I'd had some funding. That would have been amazing. That would have been so useful. You know, that's not a way to kind of live, and I kind of made my peace with that,
but it was
hard.
I have so much respect for you for that, because it just, I think you're probably right, that is the way to deal with it, because it's one of those things where, like, it will eat you up, but it doesn't change the fact, does it? So,
And actually, I was fortunate that I have managed to afford it somehow. A lot of bank shifts, but you know, I did make it happen, and actually there'll be loads
ironically, a lot more working in the hospital,
a lot more working people. There'll be other people that's just not an option, and so I do feel really fortunate that I had the means to do that by making a lot of sacrifices, basically.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Let's go and have a little think now about, so we're saying, so let's talk about what IVF is. I think, you know, we've a lot of people have heard of it, a lot of people are aware, but a bit more of like, what are we actually talking about when we say IVF? What does that mean? What does the kind of process look like? Because people might hear like three rounds of IVF. What do we mean?
Yeah, so IVF is in vitro fertilization, which is literally in glass fertilization, so outside of the body. And so the IVF process can be quite long, or it can be only a matter of weeks. So essentially you want to stimulate the woman to be producing lots of follicles in the hope that those follicles have got eggs in. Then once those follicles have grown to a appropriate size, you would then have your egg collection. When you have your egg collection, the woman is usually sedated, and then vaginally a needle is kind of put through into the vagina and the eggs are sucked out of the follicles. Thankfully, you're hopefully very heavily sedated. And then those eggs are taken away. The male partner will then go and provide a sperm sample. Both of those samples are given to the embryologist, who then puts them together. So in IVF, the eggs and the sperm are put in a dish to fertilise. There's also other things like ICSI, where a sperm will be injected into an egg. I mean, there's loads of different kind of different parts of IVF that you can have and things like that. But in like traditional IVF, the eggs are collected, the sperm is provided, and they're left to mix in a dish to see what fertilises. Then following, if anything does fertilise, you've got kind of even more waiting. So roughly on day 5, which is where the kind of fertilised embryo becomes what's called a blastocyst, which is kind of like a stage of the embryonic development. That's kind of the optimal time for them to be put back inside the woman. So 5 days after you've had the eggs collected, a tiny, tiny little embryo will be popped back into your uterus via your vagina. And then you have to wait and see 2 weeks later if you're pregnant.
It's so helpful just to hear, just like a straightforward, like this is how it kind of works scenarios. You don't often hear like the process of like,
I mean, that's very much a streamlined kind of explanation for sure.
But I think it's just really useful to kind of hear like a top line explanation of like how this works. And the thing that jumps out to me when you're listening to it is that, you know, when you hear like, oh, 3 rounds, 4 rounds, 5 rounds, it kind of trivializes it a little bit. It sounds like quite an ordeal, to be honest.
Well, I guess when I kind of glossed over, but the stimulation phase where you're growing those follicles, the woman has to inject herself like once or twice a day, every day, which I'm so used to that I kind of forget that actually for a lot of people, that's really weird to literally inject yourself. And a lot of the medication doesn't come pre-mixed. So you have to pre-mix it, like you have to mix it up yourself, which obviously being a midwife, I was totally fine with, but other people are there, you know, and you've got your powder and you've got your solution and you have to mix it all up, draw up the right amount. It actually is quite intensive. And also during the stimulation phase, you might be going to your clinic every day or every other day for bloods and an internal scan. So yes, although I gave a very kind of rapid explanation, you're right, it's so much more investment than that.
Isn't it? It's intensive. It sounds mentally and physically and emotionally a huge task, really.
Yeah, I was quite fortunate.
I don't want to be worried about doing it, but it's good to actually share the honest thing of what it's like, isn't it?
For sure. I mean, if it was awful, no one would ever do it.
Yeah.
And I was really fortunate. It's kind of a double-edged sword. I responded very poorly, as in my follicles didn't really grow. So I didn't really get any physical discomfort. Whereas other people, they'll be growing like huge amounts of follicles. So they might feel like they've got bunches of grapes, you know, on either side of their ovaries, which are heavy, you're bloated, you're uncomfortable, like your stomach gets sore from all the injections. There's loads of different injections you might be taking. Like you take one to stimulate, and then when you get to a certain point, you'll be taking another one to stop you ovulating too soon. Like you get bruises, it's really sore in your tummy as well. But after 11 rounds I feel like I'm so used to that kind of process that it doesn't really seem like that much of a big deal to me. But even on my first round of IVF, I remember looking at the medication and be like, oh my god, am I responsible for mixing this up? Even though that's my day job as well, so yeah, I felt quite fortunate.
I get what you mean, because obviously for people, yeah, if you're from like, if you're a teacher or something that's done something like that, it's quite a big task. So there is quite a lot to it, like the round. I get why you say the rounds, but it just, yeah, it's really useful to understand what that looks like, so you get the kind of what someone goes through. Why does the NHS, I know it's all done with money, but why do we go for 3 rounds? Like, is there a percentage of number of people, or you know, how many people are likely to become pregnant after 3 rounds of IVF? Is that why we go for that number?
Yeah, so that's a nice recommendation, because that's how many they estimate. But they say 3 full rounds, which would be your egg collection and then every single embryo that you have transferred back. So for some people, they might have one egg collection and have like 10 embryos frozen, which that would be one full round, like all of that. Whereas I'm a very poor responder, so I would get like one embryo each time. So for me, it was like egg collection every time.
And is that perhaps why then that there was, you didn't have any of those three, but is that why then for you that it is about having more of the rounds? Is that why then?
Yeah, so I had to, because I was getting such a poor number every time, that's why I had to do so many egg collections. Whereas, yeah, someone else might get like 30 follicles. Obviously, there's usually quite a big drop-off rate as well. So you might start with like a big number of follicles, but you might only end up with a small number of embryos. They say like IVF is a roll of the dice, and it absolutely is, because it's such a numbers game. You know, even if you have 30 follicles, you still might not get that one baby at the end.
So it's quite this. It sounds like there is quite a bit of luck in it as well, or chances.
Luck,
is that,
magic, science. Who knows? Like, gosh. It's. I think.
Are you a spiritual person? Do you believe?
No.
Are you more on the science side?
Oh,
or the
gosh.
Luck side? What do you
think? That's such a good question, Alex. So I am very sciencey, and I don't know, maybe you're the same with all the medical stuff. Like, I'm really into, I want the evidence. I want to know what's the best treatment from an evidence-based perspective. But at the same time, and this is so mad, but the cycle that made my son Percy, I had one single follicle, one follicle. That is like, most IVF clinics won't even treat that. They'd be like, no, you've got no hope in hell. I had one follicle, it made one egg, which then fertilised and made my son.
Made one baby,
And the chances of that happening are like so minuscule. So part of me is like, oh my gosh, he was so meant to be here.
So kind of that kind of almost a battle against the old science there, doesn't it? You're like, oh, hang on.
I just have really good trust in my doctor, because I feel like he really knew what he was doing, but it is, it's just a massive roll of the dice every time.
I mean, whatever you call it, it's just a special thing, isn't it?
Yeah. You could argue as well that you would have like one main follicle when you ovulate each month.
That's true.
So like conception in itself is miraculous. Like, I'm a midwife and I look at other women and I'm like, oh my God, you have a baby in there. Like, how mad is that?
Do you find, because when I was working in Lewisham's labour ward, I'd always see the babies and I'd just be like, this is crazy.
Yes.
I was like, I've done med school. I still think this is great. I get the science. This is still crazy. It literally still would baffle me. And we do, you know, I'd assist, generally we'd assist in the C-section. That's where the, you know, SHOs would get involved, helping the C-sections. And I'd just be like, oh my God, this is like a human thing we're letting out here.
Yeah, like I look at my son and I'm like, you were literally inside me. I grew you from a tiny cell. Like, that is mind-boggling.
That's why, like, it is just, you know, that's why conception and, you know, the whole process of fertility is just a phenomenal thing in itself. It's just, to really think about it, is just, you know, you've got these cells, this DNA, and it goes, and your baby's born, and it has hair colour, it's got eye colour, I think. It goes on to have a personality.
Yes, that's also really strange.
Becomes a person. You're like, oh, you're having a strop now.
It's
like,
and I think as well, part of the reason I love being a midwife is actually there's so much we don't know, because a lot of like science, medicine, we want to know. Whereas actually, if you're a midwife, we don't really know what gets you into labour. It happens when your body's ready, and that's amazing, and I love that part of it. Obviously, it's incredibly frustrating when you're overdue and you're like, when's this baby coming? But actually, that's so special that we just can't explain that. We don't know what actually happens. We have no control over it. We think we can maybe control it in some ways, but actually, there are so many secrets within the body. And that's why I find it such a contradiction, because I feel like my body had so many secrets from me when I couldn't conceive. But at the same time, that's what I really value about pregnancy and having a baby, is that there are so many secrets that we can't fiddle with yet.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I'm going to ask you a few myth-busting things around actually the time of like going into labour, like the eating different things and what works, bouncing on the ball. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just to kind of follow the ending, I guess, what we're talking about there. So IVF, if you get your three rounds, and then some people need to have more and they go private. Obviously, the hopeful end goal is to become pregnant. How does it work when it comes to deciding? Can you right, I'm going to accept where we are here. Maybe I don't want to continue trying, or maybe this isn't happening for me. Is there guidance for people around that, or support? How do you kind of know? Or is it just a personal choice?
Well, it's so personal, and I really don't know the answer, because I don't know if I ever was going to reach the point of stopping. And that, I would say, is a flaw, because in myself, not necessarily in other people, but I don't know what my red line was, and I feel like I was just going to keep going at all costs. And, you know, it can be really detrimental to your relationships and financially and things like that. And so for some people, it's a financial decision. We can't afford any more IVF. That's the end of it. Other people will feel like, I can't put myself through that emotional turmoil again, because it is so distressing when you have another negative pregnancy test. And it is such a personal decision. There are some charities like Fertility Network and things like that. Another, you can get like fertility specific counsellors who might be able to help you come to that decision. But yeah, I really don't know, because I don't know if I could, for me, I don't know if I could ever reach that point of saying enough's enough. And I feel like that was a massive flaw, that I would probably risk an awful lot to keep going.
It's kind of a very personal thing, isn't it? It's clearly a very personal journey. And this, just on the final, as we come to the end of part two, we're going to do our myth busting at the start of part three. The science and the, you know, the technology is developing. I mean, is there, do you see more coming through in terms of in the fertility space? I mean, it's phenomenal to hear things like, well, you know, first of all, the kind of basic idea of having egg in a glass, the sperm, see if it, you know, see what happens. That now you're like, okay, actually, we're going to put the sperm inside and we're going to start, you know, moving to those next levels. Like, is there stuff on the horizon that's interesting, exciting in this space? Like, are we at a level where we are in terms of IVF and fertility?
Oh no, I think there's still like so much more to be done especially in terms of like the microbiome of the uterus, or like implantation, and like what is the optimum environment for implantation and those sorts of things. Like, there's still so much we don't know, and there's, especially in fertility, in privately, there's like lots of add-on treatments, which some of them have got like really dubious evidence, but clinics will still kind of push them. So there is still a lot of stuff that is unknown, and I really feel like those sorts of things will definitely kind of, because there's money in IVF, there's also research.
Sure.
Because,
and it drives, yeah, research is kind of a little bit how the world works, unfortunately. But so, and then just finally, for anyone that wants to, say, find a clinic or whatever, how do you go about choosing where to go? I mean, if you've seen a gynecologist, perhaps they referred you or they've given you advice, but are there some things that you can, just to make sure that you're going to a place that's, yeah, reputable, I guess?
So if you're going by the NHS, you'll have pretty much no choice. Yeah. They'll refer you to one clinic, that will be where you go. But if you're paying privately, then yeah, it can be a real minefield. So my first place to go would be the HFEA, which is the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Authority, and they are the regulator of IVF clinics in the UK, and they've got a really good tool on their website where you can compare clinics, which is really not biased at all, so it's just the data. Whereas if you click on like individual clinics websites, they'll be like, look, we have a this much percentage success rate, and actually if you delve into the numbers, they'll have only shown you people who are under 30, or like they cancel loads of cycles because they don't want their stats changed and things like that. So the HFEA is a really, really good place to start. So you can look at people's ratings of the clinics, you can look at their best, like the stats. So you want to look for your live birth rate, you don't want to look for your pregnancy rate, because your aim is to bring the baby home. So those can be quite different stats. So always making sure you're looking for your live birth rate, always go to the HFEA.
That's brilliant. You know, that's absolutely fantastic advice. And if you haven't heard of this, you won't know about it. If you don't know about it, you can't use this tool. So thank you for sharing that. Guys, we'll come to the end of part two there. We're going to do a little bit of myth busting at the start of part three. Like, what actually works when you're trying to go into labour or not? Let's talk a little bit. And then, yeah, we're going to delve a bit more into what needs to really change in this space. What can we do better? There's certainly plenty. Thank you, guys. We'll see you all very soon. Take care and goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.